you want insight and solutions, you're in for a unique experience. One where you're free to ask questions about where you're stuck, ask and hear questions of an everyday variety, global or personal, deep or ancient. All questions are welcome. Any human issue or problem is seen with a new awareness from Patricia's powerful understanding of whole brain thinking. Receive insights you never thought were possible, and be comforted to hear some insights you always knew were right. Discover the profound and the creative value that problems can give us. And now, Patricia Sun.
Welcome to Trust the Problem. Today on Trust the Problem, I'm going to talk about compulsiveness and reactiveness, reactionary thinking, compulsive thinking, reactionary thinking. And it's playing such a role these days in our government, in our family life, in the world, in human thinking. And I've had a theory for a very long time about this evolutionary leap that I believe is happening. And part of this evolutionary leap for me is that we are going to be looking at ourselves a little more deeply. We're going to be a little bit more self-observant, self-correcting, thinking beyond polarized thinking, thinking beyond duality, being able and willing to look at the overview, to see mistakes, tries that we've made that were mistaken, and change ourselves. And how we can do that, how we can get a deeper insight as to why are we compulsive about certain things. You know, it's everything. It's everything from the food to how you manage things, to reactions that you have to people, to what you allow yourself to do. It covers so many areas of our lives. And there are examples in the news all the time, from political to just social, and trying to understand it. And I believe that compulsive thinking and reactionary thinking come from wounds, and that they are wounds that are not processed, wounds that are not handled. And when you don't want to handle them, when you don't want to look at them, then they become this sort of compulsive, I don't even know how to say it, sort of this compulsive energy pocket inside you that grows as you deny it. It's when it's time to grow, and we don't want to, and we say, no way, I'm not looking at that, I'm not dealing with that, or we don't even think about it. We just emotionally feel it as too explosive, too big, too painful, too overwhelming. We shunt the energy down, and then what comes up that's available to us is our immature reactions, our violations of others, our violations of ourselves, and this is what causes us to be compulsive. And often it's displaced energy. Often we're compulsive about things that are not exactly really the issue. And I suppose, overeating or eating the wrong things, because many people who are overweight don't really overeat. They eat the wrong things, or they even eat some of the wrong things. For some metabolisms, especially when you're under stress, just eating some of the wrong things can really mess up your metabolism. And it's because your body is trying to tell you it's in need of healing. It's in need of correction. And I think it's one of the common things is the attachment to sweets, that people who eat too many sweets, and out of all that I do, that's my worst obsession or compulsion or thing to do. And what sweets mean are you need sweetness. You need sweetness in your life. And if you're looking at the sorrows and you're looking at the difficulties and you're not creating enough sweetness in your life, you often, by being stoic, will create a compulsion or a desire. And you know, desires are the first level, then it's compulsion. And you only need to desire something a little too much instead of doing the thing that you need to do to make energy change, to make the world grow and change. I had a quote here, which I can, of course, not find. It completely disappeared off the computer, but it was, I believe, from Carl Jung, who, and I might have quoted it before. It's one of my favorites, where he's talking about things that come by compulsively, and things that make us reactionary, are really come because of deep secrets that are hidden in the unconscious that we will not, we refuse to grow, basically. We refuse to face it, we refuse to grow. And it is in that refusal that we suffocate life, that we harm ourselves. And this is a very powerful realization. And I think something that is so deeply pervasive in our world that we almost can't look at it because it's just so big. And it affects everyone. And by big, that's what I mean. It's not only big inside each person, but big in every single one of us. And so the maturity of consciousness means that you'll be willing to look at it. And we are all really going through so much change right now. I get so many calls from people who are almost beside themselves, coming from many different issues, many different problems, but so overwhelmed, so overloaded. You know, people think they're getting Alzheimer's or something because they can't remember anything. Well, we have such a glut of information coming at us through all electronic means, and I mean, just simply passwords that you have to memorize and learn, and that you can't trust anybody, and that you have to keep double-checking in and everything that was supposed to be made easy by going online, people now lying, and you can't believe it. And all of this causes that kind of stress. And the issue of dishonesty plays in here because that's the injury. And when we are lied to as children, and when we are lied to as adults, and when we lie to ourselves, we create this wound, which creates a backlog. And it is the ground ripe for fascist thinking. You know, people forget that fascism is, you know, it's not just a political thing. It's a psychological thing. And it can happen to anyone, any culture, and particularly democracies. Because democracies are open to reflecting the consciousness level of the people. And I'm right now kind of looking for this great quote I read a little while ago about fascism, and I think it was about Goebbels, where he was basically saying, I can't find it right now, maybe I'll find it in the break, but what he was basically saying was that if people are stupid enough to give them the power, then they have a right to take it. And so that if a democracy does that, well, then that's, here it is. We enter Parliament in order to supply ourselves in the arsenal of democracy with its own weapons. If democracy is so stupid as to give us free tickets and salaries for this bear's work, that's its affair. We do not come as friends nor even as neutrals. We come as enemies. The wolf bursts into the flock, and so we come. But you know what it reminded me of? And I remember the senator that's now retired from Texas. too many things on my, I can't remember his name now. What he said, he was cornered sort of in C-SPAN in the halls as he was leaving. And you know, he said, well, you know, people don't know what democracy really is. And, of course, the good C-SPAN reporter said, well, what is it? And he said, well, it's the people who want it the most get it. And we have moved to that place of reactionary, I want it, or I don't want it, or not thinking deeper, not thinking of the bigger effect, not thinking of who's harmed or who's injured, just reacting at one's own feeling of threat, not being able to look at the bigger picture. And of course, compulsivity is when you don't even get to almost think about it. It's been sublimated into some kind of reactionary action that's supposed to discharge this pent-up hurt and frustration because we're not processing, because we're not thinking. And this is Carl Jung's thought all the time. And it was, I think, one of the besides the discovery of the shadow or giving it name, I think one of the most wonderful things about Carl Jung was that he really said in so many words that if you won't look, if you won't work on yourself, you're going to do something evil. You're going to do something that stifles life. You're going to start harming yourself or others because things come up, and that's why the show is called Trust Problem, because things come up as a problem because you are now ripe and ready to look at it, to face the mistake of the past or the misunderstanding or the betrayal or the dishonesty or the wound. And when we refuse to face it, when we try to plow ahead and just dominate others, then we become reactionary, then we become compulsive. I remember once years ago when I had my radio show, someone called and said, well, what's wrong with being a reactionary? What's wrong with that? And that is the level of mentality where we are, is that, well, I feel like it, and I feel it strongly, so I should just go do it. Well, I'm all for people listening to how they feel and respecting it. It's a very important part of being alive and interacting well in the world. But there's a difference between observing how you feel and looking deeply into yourself to see why you have a reaction, to see what are the roots of it, to contemplate it, to reflect on it, and then have some empathy for the other person, have empathy for yourself, look a little deeper. All of that puts you down into the process well. It puts you down into healing that wound that's ripe for awareness, that's ripe for understanding, that's ripe for process and becoming transformed, giving you new knowledge, giving you new insight, causing you to become the more that you can be. This is what it takes to be a grown-up. And our whole culture in America has been getting away with, I don't know what to call it, sort of riding on past laurels, I guess one might say, but basically just ignoring being adult and self-correcting and responsible. And, you know, I think part of the reason is, I do think television has played a large role in this because there's a certain psychology of anticipating everything should happen very quickly now. It should just happen. And we should just know. And we should just get what we want. And we should just do what we want. That is this quality. And I remember years ago when I was doing my workshops, I was talking about this very same subject exactly. And there was a woman in the audience who was a producer of television shows. And she said two separate things, which I thought were very, very interesting. And she was saying that everything has been sped up because of television. There's a whole lot of assumption going on. And I used this example she gave as to why we don't teach our children very well. We keep forgetting they're new. You know, they're coming in as new people with not all firsthand experience. And now we've got adults teaching children who themselves don't have firsthand experience. And by firsthand experience, I mean understanding nature, understanding how things work in the physical world, having real connection with life, animal life, be a tree hugger, if you will. Have some empathy and concern with where food comes from and why it's valuable and how it has to be fresh and not dyed and not, genetically engineered in extreme ways that are not for the purpose of nutrition and the balance in the environment, but for purposes of money and appearance. Well, this money and appearance thing is what we've been doing so much. And so when what her two points were that, for instance, she said, years ago, in fact, just look at old cowboy movies, when the hero comes riding into town to see what's going on, you see him riding in, you see him hop off his horse, you see him tie his horse up on the little post there, and you see him walk up the steps of the saloon and push the door open and walk inside. That they showed you all of that. But now they have condensed everything. You see him running, and then you see him pushing the saloon doors open. They don't show you tying up the horse. They don't show you how you get off the horse. They don't care about that anymore. Who has a horse? They don't care. They just want to go from the running to the place to going through the door to the action of where the bad guy is. And the parts of life that are, it's now called boring. It's not called interesting. But one of the reasons some of this stuff is boring to people is because they have no sense of excitement of dismounting a horse quickly, and because they don't know what it feels like. And they don't know that you have to tie the horse up or it'll wander away. And they don't see it as a living animal. They see it as a motorcycle, it's a machine. And I remember I've had a horse, and when I would be at the stable, there would be a lot of people who would be reacting to their horses like they're supposed to be machines. They'd park them in the stable. They wouldn't exercise them properly or enough. They wouldn't treat them as living beings. They'd get mad at them the way parents get mad at children when children just don't know how to do something or don't understand it yet. And all of this creates those wounds. And what happens, to get back to my real point here about all this compulsive behavior and reactionary kind of thinking, what happens is that when that's ignored, sort of in that blank spot, because it's uncomfortable, because we don't understand it, and we push things and we go just to the reactionary point, we lose all the details that give us the solution. I want to say that again. What happens is when we just rush to have the right answer and we're reactionary, we are overtly, with our own intelligence, blocking out all the details so we can rush to a reaction. We're blocking out all the details that create the solution, that give us the tools, the knowledge, the wisdom, the parts that are missing to be inventive and creative with to solve the real problem. And what we're left with when we think reactionarily is just like a dictator or a parent who's very dictatorial. I told you so, so do it. It's just like a force to just make them. Don't have any awareness of their living being, of their nature, of their soul, of their needs, of what's going on, what will empower them, what will teach them. That's irrelevant. What's relevant is you get what you want in that moment. And, that's back to the Texas senator. I keep thinking his name's going to pop in my head, and it isn't yet. But anyway, so he thinks, democracy is the people who want it most get it. That's why things move rapidly to at all costs. And the more fearful everyone gets and the more unreflective, And sadly, our president has made it a badge of honor that he does not self-contemplate. He does not like process. I heard him say, he says, I'm not interested in process. I just want to win. And that's what he wants. And that's reactionary, and that's because it's covering up a lot of wounds inside of him. And that's what keeps the thinking simplistic. And one of the things we really all need to learn is that we are all in process. So, it's, archetype. He is so bold an archetype, so huge an archetype, that he's not even only affecting our country, he's affecting absolutely the whole world. And the whole world is wondering what has happened to the United States. Our reputation is appalling. It's horrible what has happened. People who travel and have through many decades really know the difference in the amount of disrespect that America now has, because we are not being reflective. We are not negotiating. We are not being diplomatic. We are not being empathetic. We are not using our power and our dignity to intervene, to divert the course of events in a respectful, dignified manner, with knowledge, with power, with concern, with respect for the other person. And we are becoming somewhat of a fascist country. And I don't say that to be incendiary or, it's what fascism is. And, I was looking again for that wonderful quote by Mussolini, who is the inventor of fascism. I've mentioned this before. That fascism is an Italian term, actually, from Rome, from the time of Rome, where the emblem of power was an axe with a bundle of reeds wrapped around it, and that's that symbol. It's called but anyway, it's the same kind of word. And this was the emblem, and it was that with all the support of the reeds, many people, many things, the axe is very powerful. So it's that symbol. And Mussolini thought that fascism, he said more accurately, can be called a government by corporate interests and corporate, paraphrase, but very close. That's what causes them to have power, and it gives interests to where it needs to be. And there was a British labor politician who in 1962, Mr. Bevin, said, "Fascism is not in itself a new order of society. It is the future refusing to be born." And I absolutely love that quote, because that's exactly what I think it is. I think fascism is a symbol, not a symbol, it's an archetype of, and an example and a living thing of what happens when any culture has wounds, has things it has to face that it has done. Like people, same metaphor as with people. And when you refuse to do the facing, then you become, compulsive, or you become reactionary, or you become dominating, and it becomes sort of like a compulsion. There's all kinds of compulsions I started out to say. Some are innocent ones, hand washing and repetitive things, trying to get order, trying to find a way to feel some order when feeling very fragmented and injured by the lack of reason. I really want to say the lack of sanity and logic and goodwill around you often causes these kinds of obsessive, compulsive behaviors, because you've truly been injured. And again, the solution, whether it's the political or it's the personal, the solution, whether it's the collective in the country or a family, the solution is always looking deeply inward and facing the pain, facing the stress, facing the part that by being seen, by being healed, a new dimension of yourself will be born. You will become more fully yourself. You'll be, we could call it a grown-up, awake, healthy, empowered, creative. You would be creative as to come into a whole nother profound level of thinking. And then you don't need to just have your way. it just to have your way. You have the patience then to see other people. José Ortega y Gasset said, it under the species of syndicalism, you know, syndication, like corporatism, and fascism, there appears for the first time in Europe a type of man who does not want to give reasons or to be right, but simply show himself resolved to impose his opinions. And George Santayana, another philosopher poet, said in the turn of the century, really, later than that, I guess it was, his fanaticism consists in redoubling your effort when you have forgotten your aim. And there's so much of that going on right now. And that's, for me, another definition of reactionaryism. It's redoubling your effort when you've really forgotten what's the point of it all. And the point just comes to be dominating, to get one specific thing and done. And that's what's affecting our country right now, because we are on the verge of a great leap in consciousness. And what we're seeing is the collective resistance to that. And, you know, the sad news for me is that people don't realize this is a wonderful thing to have this breakthrough, and that facing our sorrow, facing our mistakes, rectifying our wrongs. You know, if you steal from someone, if you plagiarize them, if you scandalize somebody, if you gossip about them, if you gang up on someone, if you take somebody's property or whatever, when those kinds of things happen, or like currently in the news, you spy on people and you lie. When those kinds of things happen, they create a big shadow. And the shadow is in the people who did it, and the people who know it but let them do it, the people who it was done to, who are too afraid to say or do anything about it, that then becomes their shadow. And this is what we're facing. We have, and we're doing more and more and more of what doesn't work, because there's less and less and less we can actually look at. And we have now a media that is just terrified to really look at issues, because it's just like a can of worms. You lift off the lid of all the things we've lied about and all the things we're not paying attention to, and the history of all our interactions, for instance, say in the Middle East or whatever. They're huge. There's so many things, and there's many things we've done that are not good. Many things we've done that are good. You know, it's not that we're just all bad or anything like that. It never is. You know, you can be, you know, 80% really great and 10% kind of eh. But 10% that's really off the mark, or even 2% that's really harmful. And what we have to correct is the 2% or the 10%. Or the 20%. That's what we have to correct. And either or thinking makes you either good or bad. And no one is really entirely all good or all bad, because everybody's in the process of growing. In fact, it's not by percentages. I used to try to use this example all the time, that, you know, to make a relationship work, it's not a 50-50 deal. It's 100% your responsibility, and it's 100% the other person's responsibility. And then when 200% come together, you get a good relationship. And it's not 200%. It's a new kind of 100%. And this is a new style of thinking that we're really all in the midst of. And this is an evolutionary leap that we are all having to face, whatever it may be in our family history, in our personal life, our own personal history, our collective cultural history, our country's history. These are the unfinished issues. And instead of making it shameful or bad or something you just don't even want to look at, it's pay dirt. It's the way to become whole. It's the way to become mature. It's the way to grow up. And this is what truly the evolutionary leap is about. You're listening to Trust the Problem, and I'm Patricia Sun. We're coming up to a break, and so I'm going to pause here, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Trust the Problem is sponsored by a nonprofit organization, the Institute of Communication for Understanding, ICU. We rely on you, our listeners, for donations to keep us on the air. To help, please visit patriciasun.com and receive a free Can't Take Sides When You Know the Earth is Round t-shirt with your donation. Thank you.
Welcome back to Trust the Problem. And now, Patricia.
Listening live right now.
Welcome back to Patricia Sun and Trust the Problem. I am Patricia Sun, and today we're talking about compulsive, reactive energy and where it comes from and why it's there. Because, you know, there's a lot of assessing it out there that it exists. And most television shows are just sort of, you know, just... I don't know what kind of word I don't want to say. Just sort of showing the problems, showing the problems, showing the problems, showing the problem, but no solutions, really. The solutions are all sort of judgmental, you know, like stop doing it. And, you know, if we could stop doing it, we would, but we can't. And the reason why we can't is because you can't stop doing it until you start processing what's behind it and what it's all related to. And this is really the evolutionary leap. This is the next part of our maturity, is beginning to understand that we really can do that. We can figure it out. We are so much more brilliant, so much more capable, so deep, so much goodness in all of us. You know, one of the things I love about the Hindu religion, I believe it is, yeah, that they believe that there's this a collective self, a huge self, which is God, and that each one of us is a little part of that self. And before I ever realized that's what I used to believe that. I mean, I utterly believed that we were all little pieces of God, and I always like to remind people, it's very important to realize you're a part of God, and therefore, you know, you feel good and feel holy and you accent that good part of yourself. And I said, but it's also very important to realize you're a very tiny little part, and also to realize so is everybody else, and so is everything else. All the life on this planet, all the galaxies, we are all part of this bigger whole. And the power of realizing that, I believe it's true, but even if it weren't true, the power of considering it, interestingly, puts you in a different frame of mind that gives you access to intuition, inspiration, insights, empathy, incredible power to heal. And it's a shift in the way you're holding the problem. And this is essential to this evolutionary leap. That's, in effect, what it is that we are changing the way we think, the way we process what happens to us, the information we get, the emotions we contain. And instead of just sort of stuffing everything and trying to hold our heads above all the yuck, which is understandable, by the way. I mean, it's a good short-term solution when you're young and you don't have any power to do anything else. It's actually, you know, a fairly optimistic way to handle it. But as we get older, we actually have greater strength to handle it. But if we don't allow ourselves to reflect on those injuries and process it and go through the catharsis, go through the realization, go through the full reparticipation in something that was violating that you could not handle, go through it now at a time when you can handle it, or you can at the very least seek support to help you handle it, then if you won't do that, then that energy stays in an arrested development form. And that's why Carl Jung and this other philosopher were saying that what it does is it causes you to thwart the future. It causes you to prevent growth and the next level of life. Your next level of life is being refused birth. And if, you know, birth is, you know, as a woman who's given birth to three children, and I had actually very large babies, and I had natural childbirth, so I had no drugs. But I remember, you know, that was about 20 minutes right before the baby's head crowns, and not crowns out of the body, but passes through the cervix. That's very painful. And at different points of time, you know, when it's very difficult, and I've worked with other women who are having babies, there's a point where a party wants to say, I don't want to do this. I want to go back. I don't want to have to do this. Well, you know, too late. This is in motion. What you have to do is the best you can, and what you have to do is get the best help you can get, the most knowledgeable, the most tender, the most caring, the most experienced, the most capable support as you are going through this biological process. You know, you can't put it back in. It's coming out. This is the right time. This is happening. It's a great metaphor, and I think it's one of the reasons why I love that quote by Mr. Bevan, where he said, and I think he did it in 1962, so, you know, he said, fascism is not in itself a new order of society. It is the future refusing to be born. And that metaphor holds. We have global warming. We have our whole economic situation is being stuffed into facades and into very narrow places, and money is being spent to propagandize everybody that everything's fine, when it's not going in a fine direction. It's poor advice. It's not healing. It's not collectively healthy. And when things are collectively healthy, as well as individually healthy, and that's the criteria, each individual being respected, collective being respected, then what's the best win-win solution? That's that whole thing about losing our aim again, and that's what fanaticism is. And we've become somewhat fanatical in our narrowness of vision, and the narrower your vision becomes, the more you do redouble your effort to make it break through and be the answer. But the answer to what? As George Santayana said, you know, that fanaticism consists in redoubling your effort when you've forgotten your aim. And I recently saw, and Larry King, you may have too, a great interview with Sean Penn. And they have a new movie out called All the King's Men with all these fantastic actors. I mean, everybody's really incredibly good actor. And I remember Huey Long talked about when I was a little girl. And I remember somebody sort of saying he was something like a dictator, but the people loved him. And I thought, well, why would the people love a dictator? And I remember I asked my father, well, why did people love Huey Long if he was a dictator? And I was pretty young then, because by where we lived, I was probably about 7 or 8. And my father said, well, he did what a lot of dictators do, is that they give people things they need in exchange for having power over things they're not aware of, things that they are concerned with, but they get the power that way. And I think, whoa, that's a deep thing. I have to remember this, because this is a big thing, that people can be, in a sense, seduced or bought off out of their need. I'm not making that a bad thing in a way. It's understandable. But in a democracy, we have to educate ourselves. We have to remember when we're getting bought off. And I think what's happened now is that people feel pretty bought off everywhere. You know, that there's not any, no party is really a straight arrow, straightforward, honest, empathetic, you know, interested in democratic, republican values. And I don't mean by the parties. I mean democracy and a republican form of government. Both are kind of lost in the shuffle. People don't understand the Constitution very much anymore. Very few people really are concerned with the principles, so that when we break the Constitution, which is the oath of office for every official, when they break the Constitution, we don't even notice. We don't even, that we can be conned with the simplest of phrases that makes it sound reasonable to do so. And but that's why you have a Constitution, is because the things that can get tricky, the core safeguard is always there. And people are willing to throw this away because they don't understand the Constitution. They don't understand how it works. Getting back to Sean on All the King's Men, this new movie out about Huey Long and Larry King, Sean said something, and I have to paraphrase because I didn't write it down at the time, but he said that Huey Long said that someday, he says, America will have to face fascism. Like, not a matter of when, not a matter of will, but when. America will have to face fascism, and it will come in the form and in the guise of anti-fascism. And I think that's exactly true, because we, as a culture, wonderfully pride ourselves in our democracy, in our liberties, in our Constitution, in our founding fathers' wisdom, in the trials and tribulations that any association of people on such a grand scale from so many places everywhere, actually, of the planet, the U.S., us, all the people of all the world are here, and we are the Americans. And to go through that process of not just assimilation, but creating a new creative future, taking the best of all the many traditions, being respectful of the many traditions, while being guided by a very well thought out constitution and government that really solely depends, according to Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and many, many others, Thomas Paine, all depends on the population being educated, that the press is free, meaning that you can find out, your press can't be shut down. But what has happened is that people, a press these days is a television station, and they're now bought up. And we really crippled the 1935 Communications Act, which said the airwaves belong to the public. I think it still says that, but it used to be against the law to own more than one. That's what gave everybody a press, or at least made lots of different presses. Now we have these five huge, megala, huge corporate entities with no soul and no even mind, just impulse, more, more, more. And we are creating a kind of lowest common denominator of awareness in our collective communication. And the Internet, of course, is the big exception. It's a free press. Anybody can set one up. Anybody can make a blog. Anybody can start trying to get people interested in it. And it is what is becoming the new leavening. So I do believe the good news is that we will keep inventing something. But how much suffering do we have to go through till we start to see what the process is of facing why we are compulsively blind or escapist or in denial, which creates this reactionary response? And there can be reactionaryism, on the right and the left. I used to always say in my workshops that, you know, the extreme right and extreme left are the same. They're reactionary, they're fanatical, they think they're right, they don't want to go through the process. They both have points that are right, good or correct, but they lose track of living the goodness, having the respect for the process. It starts to become way too polarized. And I'm not even talking about a homogenized middle. It's not a place you stop. It's not a place you land. And this is the big piece. This is the piece that makes it anti-life, anti-being born, anti the next phase, anti-creativity, anti the next step, is that we coming from old-style thinking. When I say we, I mean the whole planet, all of us Homo sapiens. When we want everything to land somewhere and stop, you know, at some imagined good place, at least for us, when we try to do that, I mean, there's nothing too wrong with shooting towards a good image, but you have to keep rectifying the image as you get more information. It's not a place you land and stop. Life is about moving. Life is about growing. Life is about discovering new things. Life is about rectifying your wrongs. Life is about discovering you made a mistake, that you tried something and it didn't take. It wasn't it. It's got something missing, or it's completely wrong, or it's based on something not true, and there needs to be a correction in it. That is life. That is living. That is vital. That is exciting. That is adventure. That is a good thing. And what we've confused everything with in our injury and in our woundedness and in our fearfulness is we have made ourselves feel powerless. And one of the things I used to say in my workshops as of 35 years ago is that the worst sin that humans can create, the worst sin, is to believe that you are powerless. Because whenever you believe you are powerless, you have disconnected yourself from the flow of life, from the flow of creativity, from the true existence of your soul, from the vitality of you as a human being, of your capacity to be who you really are. And when you disconnect from that enough, long enough, deep enough, strong enough, completely enough, you will create evil in the world. You will cause someone harm. At the very, 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 very least, yourself. But probably anyone you're in contact with. Anyone who needs you. Anyone who loves you. Anyone who relies on you. Whether it's fellow citizens, or other human beings on the planet, or your children, or your husband or wife or lover or friend, or parent, because the vitality of love is a creative force. It's a form of intelligence. And you have to open to it. You cannot ignore it, hold it aside, and stop it without causing terrible harm to yourself and to others. And this is what the evolutionary leap is about, and everyone is in on the job. You know, we're all playing a part. We all have some piece of this puzzle to solve. Absolutely every single person. No exception. Each at a different level, different area, different thing. Many are all the same things. You know, we got a lot of the same stuff. And the good news is, as you work on some of that common stuff that's very entrenched, you're a pioneer. You're a light in the dark. You know, this is what Jesus said, you know, when you have this great insight, you know, don't hide it under a bushel basket. Put it on a candlestick. And there, you know, it can shine and light up the room. And by the way, that doesn't mean grab people by the lapel and tell them they have to, you know, say Jesus Christ, Sig Heil, or else they're, you know, they're going to go to hell. That's not what that's about. It's about shining the goodness. It's about being the goodness. And these are the antidotes to compulsive behavior and reactionary behavior and thinking. It is to embrace the process of shining, of healing, of growing, of living. And this is why we are in actually a wonderful time. It's a difficult time. I mean, I know it gives me stomach aches. I'm sure it gives other people stomach aches or headaches or whatever. Because the more sensitive you are, the more open you are, the more you see the violation and the suffering that is caused. And that's hard. On the other hand, if you know that it's actually happening in fairly limited amounts, considering how devastating it could be, and that the limited amounts are there as exemplars about the harm it causes to be unconscious. So we will learn what we're doing. So we will select being awake. So we will choose not to be in denial. So we will choose to be awake and face things and heal things and know that that's exciting. You know, Buddha said there's only two mistakes one can make along the way to the road of truth. One is not going all the way, and the other is not starting. And I would say compulsive behavior comes from not going all the way, and reactive behavior comes from not starting. Just won't do it. Won't face any mistakes. And another concept, I actually wanted to end the show on this quote, but it's in my mind and it's here, so I'm going to say it. I'll probably say it again as we end. But Buddha said, thousands of candles can be lighted from a single candle. And the light of the candle will not be shortened. Happiness never decreases by being shared. I used to feel that very much about love, that love was something that the more you gave it away, the more you had, that love was something that was not depleted by being cultivated. It only healed you, empowered you, and made the world more healthy. And when I say love, I don't mean make nice or doing what other people want or, you know, all the superficial definitions of love. I mean the profound state of radiance that love is. And when you feel that and you have that goodwill to people, then it shines. And it's catching, and that's why this candle metaphor is so powerful. And it doesn't take anything away from you. I would say, actually, it adds to you. It makes the world you live in more beautiful. It creates joy. And this is where we're going. This is the next piece. And when we hang on to what doesn't work, we just cause more of it. I have some Buddha quotes in front of me, so my eyes just fell upon this. This holding on to anger is like grasping a hot coal with the intent of throwing it at someone else. You're the one who gets burned. And this is so true. This is why denial doesn't work and causes such a mess. It actually not only injures the people you're throwing the coals at, your soul is burned. It's a sad thing, you know. George Bush says people pray for him, and I do. I pray for him all the time. I just pray for him to become more awake and to let things come out. I remember when Nixon was president, people in Northern California particularly didn't like him. And I would do workshops there, and I would say, well, you know, you really have to pray for him. You know, people, he's so bad, he's this and that. And I said, well, you know, you have to thank him. And people frown at me even more. And I said, well, look, we used to believe mom and apple pie and the president doesn't lie. And that was the filter through which we had to look at everything. You know, now we know the president lies. And more than that, he made sure we knew it. He taped it all. And at some level, people who are unconsciously or out of dysfunction, their own woundedness, become, whether they're Hitlers or any type, they are acting out the collective dysfunction. They represent the susceptibility of the collective. That's why they get so far. I used to always say, you know, you can't really blame leaders for what happens, because leaders only exist because of their followers. The shocking thing is the cult-like following of bad leaders. That's the shocking thing. People who on their own and alone would never be ditto heads, would never just go along, if they were faced with the whole thing in an innocently straightforward way, they would choose much better. But there's a great seduction in being escapist and simplistic. Osama bin Laden and George Bush, within a week of one another, I remember, I heard it, each said the exact same sentence, you're for us or you're against us. And that kind of simplistic, reactionary thinking is worse than blind. It polarizes us into ignorance and causes us to stay stuck. And that's sort of the obsessive part. It's the more wrong almost we become, the more blind and obsessive the cult-like response becomes. And this is what we have to face in ourselves. We have to let ourselves wake up and be grown up and look at what's making what work and what doesn't work. See who's harmed. Look at the history. Don't just say, look at what to do now. You can't see what to do now unless you look at the mistakes in the past, unless you come with some sense of rectifying the wrong. You know, people don't understand rectifying wrong. It's not just a matter of saying you're sorry. It's about fully feeling it and understanding what harm you caused, which will then inspire you, if it's genuine, to rectify that wrong in whatever way is not harmful. That's what you will feel as a grown-up. And that is the healing of compulsive reactions. And that is the healing of being just reactionary. And I think it's just very important that we understand what we mean when we say reactionary, where it comes from, and not be intolerant or unkind. So much of the reactionary stuff is mean-spirited, and I just, again, my eyes fell upon this quote from Buddha, the tongue is like a sharp knife. It kills without drawing blood. And we have to be thoughtful about what we say and how we say it, that we do say things that we believe are true, and we try to bring things to the table, we try to uncover and realize what's happening, and that doesn't mean that you're trying to harm the person who you are revealing what they've done that is harmful. You're just trying to get what's harmful not to keep happening, and part of that is rectifying it by that person seeing it and helping to change it. This is why collectively we need to face what we're doing. Escapism doesn't work. It only makes it get worse. So we really are in a place where we have such power to keep ourselves healthy and alive and awake. And it is up to us. And Buddha did say, too, he is able who thinks he's able. We need to know we are able to be our best selves. We are able to be awake and to solve problems and be stronger and healthier for it. Well, I'm Patricia Sun, and I am so glad you are here with me today, and you've been listening to Trust the Problem. Please trust them.
You've been listening to Trust the Problem with Patricia Sun. This program and its content is copyrighted to Patricia.